hearing. Let the record reflect, the time is 1 p.m. Today is Wednesday, April 1st, 2009. Today we have my good friend Representative Wilson, Representative Olson, Gutenberg, Kawasaki, and Tuck. Co-Chair Johnson is working on a bill up in another committee, and myself, Representative Newman. We do have a quorum. Today we're going to be hearing from the individuals that were put forth by the administration to be members of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. First, we need to take care of some little technical house cleaning on House Bill 70. If you remember, that was Representative Gatto's Alaska Grown Agricultural Products. There was some changes that we made here. There's a little technical thing that we have to do on that, and my staff is going to explain that so that we can move that out. But first, I think we need to move to adopt the CS. Right, so first, I guess we have to rescind our action on House Bill 70. And to do that, is there any objection to rescinding our action on House Bill 70? Hearing and seeing
none. Do we get an official motion to do that?
Sorry, make a motion to do it.
I move that we rescind our action on House Bill 70, version
E. Hearing and seeing no objection, motion so moved. Now we have to bring the working document in front of us.
I move that we move a CS for House Bill number 70, resources version S before us.
And Rex Shattuck from my staff will explain why we had to do this. Rex?
Rex Shattuck, staff to Representative Newman, Chair Newman, members of the committee. As was noted, E version passed out. As we had the final draft made, it was pointed out by Ledge Legal that there was a minor issue with it, actually a major issue in their eyes. The new provisions that were drafted and put into and voted out of the committee on page 6 of the E version, line 22, line 23, halfway through, if the money from the sale is used to support the operation of a school, garden, greenhouse, or farm under this section. Our Ledge Legal folks said that that new provision located there required that money being put back into the program, into the school. It raised an issue under the state's constitutional prohibition against dedicated funds. And the reason for their concern was because a school district might be considered a political subdivision of the state or an agency of a...
Representative Wilson asked me a question. Where on page 6 or where was this?
Okay,
changed?
The E version, page 6, halfway through line 23.
Thank you.
That provision may raise an issue under the state's constitutional prohibition against dedicated funds because the school district might be considered a political subdivision of the state or an agency of the municipality, which is a subdivision of the state. It was thought that the courts under Article 9, Section 7, we have a prohibition against dedicated funds in the Constitution, and the courts have felt that the state's Supreme Court raised the issue with regard to municipalities, the question of whether municipalities as a political subdivision are constitutionally restrained from dedicating general tax revenue has not fully been resolved. Therefore, it appears that this could cause a problem. The new version S, page 6, line 23, actually line 22, you'll note that it's been changed to just read D, subsection D, if a school district operates a school garden, greenhouse, or farm, the excess fruit and vegetables may be sold. So all we have done is cleaned up the language that put us in conflict, possibly with the Constitution.
Representative Kawasaki, and can we get Representative Gatto's staff up here? This is Representative Gatto's bill. Name and affiliation.
For the record, my name is Sandra Wilson, staff to Representative Gatto.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm reading through the memo from legal. It actually cites a Fairbanks case, undedicated funds, and we've gone through this issue in Fairbanks quite a bit, dealing with the Convention and Visitors Bureau and whether that bed tax money should be appropriated directly to the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Of course, you know that because you're from Fairbanks. It becomes a fight every year. The draft e-version says that that the district may sell, or that vegetables may be sold if it's used to support the operation of school gardens. The new version just says that they may be sold. I don't know how we get away from that still being an issue, because it seems like the wording is exactly the same. The only difference is that now the money for the sale is to support operations of school gardens. Now it actually leaves it open as to where they can spend the money. Can you address that?
Mr. Shattuck?
Co-Chair Newman, through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki. The intent of the committee through the discussion seemed to not want to send the money anyplace else, but allow them to make that local decision. And legal suggested that this was the minimum that we could do to still allow that local decision without directing funds and running afoul of that constitutional prohibition. I don't think it was the intent from what we listened to the testimony and talked with legal about for the committee not to want that to happen. They felt that doing it this way just didn't run afoul of it.
Did Representative Gatto's staff have a comment on that?
Just my understanding was from talking Senator Wilson, Representative Gatto's office, just my understanding with talking with the attorneys over in Ledge Legal was that as long as we said that they could sell them but didn't direct how the funds were to be used, then it was legal. But as long as we directed how they were to use the funds, we couldn't do that. That was my understanding.
I think we had Representative Tuck and then Gutenberg.
Yeah, and I didn't read that Fairbanks case, but I was curious, how is this different from... Is it true with when you collect other revenues for like sports games or bake sales or any type of events that may raise money for a sports team or band or whatever? Does that apply also?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I think most of those fundraising is through the general public and not from the state. Therefore, I think it's a different issue. If money is raised by a PTA to support a sports team, that money is coming from the general public and not coming out of the general fund. Consequently, I don't think that that quite covers that prohibition.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Actually, when I was in band, I know that we raised money for our trips, which didn't come through the PTA. So, but maybe, yeah, okay. I was just curious because I know there's other type of revenue events as well as revenue generating sales that I'm not sure if they do go directly. I assume they went directly to the activity, but maybe not. So thank you.
I think I can safely say that it's the intent of the sponsor, and certainly the way I read this is as a legislator, and intent language does matter in the committee's process when they go through and read this. It is the intent of at least this legislator, the chair, that those monies, if they put together a greenhouse and a program, there's cost involved in that. And if they can sell some vegetables out of that, that those monies be directed back into that greenhouse program, buying pots and potting soil, fertilizers, nutritional needs, irrigation equipment. You know, that there's expenses and, you know, trying to have them self-sustaining like that. I think that's the intent here, what they're trying to do. Is that right, Representative or Ms. Wilson?
That's correct.
So legislative intent. So if you've got different intent of how you think that should be done, then maybe you ought to speak up. Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, your comment, I think we all agree on that, and we just want to make it work. I'm not sure, but, you know, what we accomplished by just abbreviating the sentence, what actually changes. I mean, their intent is to support the operation. The money goes into the school district's account, I imagine. Ledge Legal probably, and I don't know if Ledge Legal's online at this point, but Ledge, you know, I mean, I don't think there's any intent on to return the money to reciprocate with the state on what we've put into it, but still just trying to figure out how we can get this to work where it's cleaner. Or, you know, because I'm not sure that I see that we've actually changed it to satisfy that. But
Mr. Shattuck, the drafter of this bill, Mr. Bannister, or Ms. Wilson, maybe you can talk to this. I know Mr. Shattuck has talked to Mr. Bannister. Do you feel that after Mr. Bannister went back at Legislegal, listened to the audio of the discussion that happened in this committee, that this is the language that Legislegal said probably covers the intent that was the discussion that happened here?
Representative Newman, Chair of Resources. My conversations with Legal, they tried to craft language that would allow for what seemed to be the intent of the committee at the highest level they could. I'm not sure how much they listened to the recordings from this committee, but that was my understanding, as they were trying as best they could to adopt the will of this committee in a way that that was constraining, so it didn't reach the prohibition, but allowed for the intent of the committee to go forward, and that was allow these actions to take place. They also pointed out that it is very much a financial issue, and I would suppose that that's another point of interest, is that it does have a referral to finance, and they could further craft that language there.
Representative Edgen.
Thank you. I've scanned the bill. I don't see where it directly indicates that the sale of money is going to go towards schools, but there again, there's 80 some odd of these funds in state statutes right now. None of them, I would wager, have that direct language in them because of the constitutionality provisions. So with that, I'm satisfied with the language, the intent of the bill. It speaks about the several pages of what the program is about. And if, as the bill sponsor or as the staff indicated, it needs to be revisited, finance can do it.
Any other questions? Any other discussion?
Don't want to hold it up. It's a good bill.
No, what would be the will?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I'd like to move to adopt we draft CS26LSO248 version S. Was it amended?
Yes.
As amended with individual recommendation.
No, version S was not amended.
I'm sorry, version S was not amended with attached fiscal notes. I apologize for my tardiness, Mr. Chairman, and individual recommendations.
Do you know any objection?
I'm sorry, it's April 1st. I
don't object to his tardiness.
See no objection to moving this bill. So done. Okay, now we're going to take up the board appointments. And just for the record, Representative Wilson and her red coat like the cares. Now for the board appointments. And these are for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. We're going to give each individual the opportunity to introduce themselves, followed by the opportunity for committee members to ask questions. We will then take public testimony. We're going to try and allow 2 minutes for each public testimony and encourage them to send in written testimony as follow-up. We're going to start with Mr. Johnson, followed by Mr. Nikich, and then Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Johnson, are you available? And committee members should have in their packet the resumes and on all these folks. Anybody who does not have that? Okay, Mr. Schmidt, Mr. Johnson, are you available?
Yes, welcome. I'm Paul Johnson, Chairman Newman, and committee members, ladies and gentlemen. I think in there it turned out there's probably my resume clear back from 2005. If anybody would like any questions or update from then, I'm more than happy to give it. Get you the background. I was born in Juneau in 1952. I've spent my life here, and have been appointed to the guide board and to the commercial services board, starting back from Cooper's Day, by also by Hickel and Sheffield and not Sheffield, Knowles, and by Palin and Murkowski. And so, anyway, I'm doing my last stint on the board here, and would welcome your support.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Wilson?
Yes. Paul, could you kind of give us a little bit about your philosophy, just in general, connected with the professional?
What?
Yeah, as a professional guide, and kind of where you stand on that?
My general philosophy, it can take quite a while, Representative Wilson, but I'll do a synopsis the best I can. I, of course, believe that this is the resources of big game in this state is one of our most valuable renewable resources that needs to be nurtured and taken care of. I believe that our guiding and transporter industry is a $250 million industry in this state that needs to be regulated with reason and ethical standards, and that our testing programs need to raise ethical standards since the board was elapsed in 95, and I think we've accomplished that. We are going to be going through our backup here. I believe that it's a very, very important industry that we are competing with, obviously, other countries and other states to get people to come. And we've got to keep our standards up to get, when people do come, be willing to pay the amount of money the state needs to derive out of these resources. And I'm hoping that by the time we get another few years under our belt, we'll have an industry that we'll be very proud of. And I'm very thankful for my life in this industry. I'll be 57 in May, and am actually participating in this program to help the younger fellows and younger ladies who are getting into this industry, and to ensure that this industry will be here long after I'm gone.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, as I look through here, I see in your resume, and I don't see the application for boards and commissions, and maybe it's just not in my packet, but not seeing that, there's some questions on there that I'd like for you to answer. And basically, the first one is, you've been convicted of a misdemeanor within the past 5 years or a felony within the past 10 years?
No, sir. I have not been convicted of anything.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I might continue.
Please, just go ahead.
Thank you. There's also a section about conflicts of interest, which state the boards and commissions require full disclosure of personal financial data under AS, yada, yada. If required to make this disclosure, are you prepared to do so?
I've done so, and I've done so many times. I just turned my paperwork in February.
Thank you. And I just want to clarify this for the record, since I don't have that application in my packet.
I did not realize that application wasn't done. I was just notified I was reappointed, and I did not fill out anything new, sir.
Well, and I appreciate that, and I just want to make sure for the record, I don't think there's any surprises here, but I do want to state that.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm with you.
Yeah, and the last one, I think, is could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions made by the boards or commissions of which you have applied?
No, sir.
Okay, and I think that's the only one that really, other than the fact that you're male or female, that really applies. But I did want to get on the record that those things were not part of your record, and just to have it as part of the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We do have Representative Gutenberg, too, and we have been joined by Representative Seaton. We do have a full committee.
Okay.
Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a copy of it, and then I picked up the wrong statute. Can you talk to us about what the Big Game Commercial Service Board does? and what your role has been on it?
Yes. Big Game Commercial Services Board was originally established in 1988. It took over from the old guide board. It put hats on the different users on the commercial side of big game, transporters, and big game guides. There are a nine-member board. It has two private landholders, two public members, a board of game member, two transporters, and two guides. I am a guide representative on the board. We administer the testing and applications of transporters and guides. There isn't any testing for transporters, but there is for guides. We set up regulations provided to us under your statutes, provided by the legislature to drive ethics and standards of for the industry. We were sunsetted in 1995. I was chairing at that time also, and was reestablished in 2005. I think we've accomplished a lot, and our last audit came out, and you reissued the board's authorization last year in 2007. Excuse me, 2008. This is 2009. I apologize.
Follow-up question.
Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have your resume from 2005, and since that time, unfortunately, Rick Urien is not around anymore, and he's one of your
efforts. Correct.
Who would you replace Rick with?
For a recommendation?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I guess I've got several. You're looking for somebody who is...
It's not critical. I mean, it's just a question of conversation.
Yeah, I would take Bobby Fithian from Alaska Professional Hunters Association, Executive Director Joe Clutch. I would take Donnie Olson, Senator Donnie Olson. Senator Burt Stedman. Any of those, if that's workable. How about my wife?
If she's in the room, you probably could not say her.
No, I'm just kidding. She's not here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Johnson, this is Representative Newman.
Yes, sir.
Are you aware of any changes, or can you give me your position or how your feelings are on how the Board of Game... I've got some questions concerning exclusive guide areas.
Yes, sir.
Can you talk to us about that? Is there a change underway, or give me some of your background on that?
Okay. I think I'll have to go back in history a little bit. In 1988 or 89, there was a decision called the Osacek decision. The state had restrictive guide areas at that point in time, and the Osacek decision stepped in under Supreme Court Rabinowitz, and at that point in time said that under the Common Use Clause, what they did is they made the guide the hunter, and said the guide is equal to the hunter and therefore falls under the Common Use Clause, and that if you had a restrictive guide areas that they'd have to fall four different categories, and gave categories in which to accomplish that. So the state tried to work down that road, and in fact it led to quite a bit of confusion, quite a bit of heartache, and in 1995 the board ended up being sunsetted. In between that time, the federal government stepped in from the U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and National Park Service, and did create throughout the whole state, essentially, you could use the words under the federal government, exclusive guide areas. So all those lands, which was tremendous amount, obviously Chugiak, Tongass National Forest, U.S. Fish and Wildlife lands on Kodiak, the peninsula, up westward, the Arctic ANWR, and all the Park Service lands were put into those and went through what was called a prospectus bid process. They were limited in duration to 10 years, with a renewal clause. Over time, that squished the remaining folks onto DNR lands, and which is obviously state remaining lands. There's 44 million acres of private land. That's why we have two private landholders on the board. And so through the process, the Board of Game has requested DNR to move forward with some kind of a system on state lands. DNR has looked at it, has worked on it for the last 3 years. They've come to us different than the federal government. They came to this board and asked for some advice of areas and let the guide work some of those areas out on their own. And all this board can do is give advice to DNR. We can make adjustments to the maps, which is our privy, but so the reality is this last Board of Game session came down was that there was 36 proposals to eliminate non-resident hunting in our state unless something was done, put in by the public and different advisory committees. So it's gotten down to the point where DNR is looking at this further, how it all comes out in the wash, but we did cooperate with DNR at their request to give them some advice, let our guides in our state work with DNR, which was completely different than the federal government, and they didn't give us any opportunity. So the bottom line is that unless DNR is able to proceed in many areas of our state, the Board of Game's toolbox is pretty limited, and you will see the end of non-resident hunting in major portions of our state, which has already occurred after the Osage decision, but it will get worse.
Well, I think, Mr. Johnson, this is Representative Newman, I think seeing the end of non-resident hunting is a policy decision that will have to come to the legislature. Certainly we'll be looking at that. Do you support exclusive guide areas?
Yes, I do. I have a federal exclusive guide area. That's not exclusive. I'm in a joint use. I don't want to use the word exclusive because that's not what they are. They're concession areas. And my concession areas, I've got three other guides in them. But I do have a concession permit with the Forest Service and a number of bears that I'm allowed to with the Forest Service. And if we didn't have that, the Board of Game can eliminate non-resident hunting without the legislature approval, and that's a policy decision they do have the ability to do and have done, obviously. And it generally goes into a permit basis, which, of course, that's the death row of guiding in that area. So, yes, I do. I think that if you're going to compete on a worldwide basis, if you have a piece of state land or you have a piece of federal land, the dollars that are derived to the state economy as a whole, if you were a hunter coming someplace, would you go someplace where you know there's an opportunity, or would you go where there's 10 other people on the same strip? Generally, the hunters will go to where there is an opportunity. Throughout the world, this is the way it's done. I know there's a lot of different philosophies on that. It's a very convoluted, complex issue. If you would like to dig into it, I'd be happy to fly to Juneau. I feel that strongly that's that important not to touch on the edges, or you have to get down into the mechanism of it to understand it, and it's very complicated. And I would be more than happy to charter a plane and come in.
Well, Mr. Johnson, it seems to me, if you're already a registered guide, that would definitely be a conflict if you were to get exclusive rights to guide in an area of the state. Is that right?
No, sir. I'm on federal land.
Okay. But you would support exclusive guide areas, moving that over onto state lands also?
Well, it's not. It's a DNR is the one who's that owns the land, and they will be one making the decision. But if DNR were to ask me, do I support them in doing this project? Yes, I do.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. And I think that my co-chair and I both would be very interested in looking at this issue and looking around the table and the eyebrows that are popping up that we'll probably be looking a little bit stronger at that exclusive game areas. Representative Wilson? Okay. Any other questions?
Well, I've got just, I'm sure there is some eyes popping up, but if you need me to, I will come to Juneau.
We'll remember that, Mr. Johnson. And when we bring it up, you'll know about it, I'm sure. We'll recognize it. Any other questions for Mr. Johnson? Hearing none? Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Is there any public testimony online or in the room? Hearing and seeing none. We will go next to Mr. Nikish. And there is some changes, by the way, just the committee members, I want you to be aware of how this is going to happen. And you'll see a green sheet that we have to sign, and the members' names will come up on there. And if you support those members, you will sign the sheet. If you do not support the movement of these members, their names forward, don't sign the sheet. We don't have the ability to individually check them off, and it's something that's been done by the administration to move these forward. And if you don't have a copy of that green sheet, we'll pass it around. You can take a good look at it so that you know what we got going before the end of the meeting. Or if you have questions, we'll continue on if we need to. Let's, Representative Kosshagen.
Mr. Chairman, I got a question about that. This doesn't mean that we're supporting that they're going to vote for him in the end, does it?
Right.
No, Representative Kawasaki, it doesn't. Mr. Shattuck can explain that, but let's, I guess that's a good question to ask before we ask this, too. So, Representative Shattuck, can you explain the policy on this one?
Thank you, sir. Co-Chairman Newman. For the record, my name is Rex Shattuck, staff to Representative Newman. Actually, on the form, it identifies that so that there is no concern. It actually states on the form, this does not reflect the intent by any member to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation. This one form gets signed or not signed by members of this committee, depending on whether or not they want to acknowledge the moving forward. The action takes place. It's not an approval or a disapproval. That comes from your vote on the floor, sir.
Yeah, so I just to make sure we clarify that is today, are we making motions to move these names forward? These names will move forward whether we approve or not. When we sign on that,
they will move
on that sheet. We'll just, you know, and then we get on the floor, you can vote to approve or not approve. But these are, it's a somewhat of a technical thing. Any more questions, Mr. Kosagi? Representative Kosagi? Do you have a copy of that green sheet so you can read it?
Oh.
Do you understand, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the names we're moving forward is just that verifying that we as a committee or committee members have reviewed their qualifications and we're forwarding them on. So we're just saying, I mean, if somebody didn't show up today, we wouldn't forward their name.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have to say that we have reviewed their qualifications first.
Representative Mr. Shattuck.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, you're right. If the individual wasn't here today, we would still schedule them for a further date before you sign to move them forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But could you answer the first part of this question too, Mr. Shattuck, which was we're just reviewing these today. And this just says that we're reviewed there.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, absolutely. You're having an opportunity to interview them for the legislature of a whole before it gets moved to the body, and you may well take opportunity to point out, ask questions, and stimulate the thought, and then the vote actually takes place on the floor, and it is an up or down vote.
Representative Olson?
Where did the new form come from?
I'm sorry, sir, repeat.
Where did the new form come from?
I believe we discovered that this took place just within the last cycle, and this was kind of a little bit different for us. Your co-chairs, my co-aide, isn't here. She did the research on that, and this is the new form that we found.
That was the first time I've seen it.
Yes, I think you'll probably, through the chair, Representative Olson, I think you'll find that form similar to the ones you'll be seeing in your committee, too.
And may I ask, you know, and this is kind of a trial process here, too, so if we have recommendations or if we like this or don't like this, let the co-chairs of resources know, and we will bring it up to the people that we need to about, you know, how this process moves forward. If you're not comfortable with this process, if you don't like it, if you have changes, if you'd like to see something else, let the co-chairs know, and we will certainly make all your voices heard.
Mr. Chairman, one last observation. It certainly begs the question about what happens if nobody signed it or one person signed it. Does the name still go forward? Do two people sign it out of the seven? So there seem to be some attached questions to this whole process, which we can deal with at a later time, but I'll put those on the record for now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there seems to be some big policy questions there. Let's go this way with Gutenberg, then Tuck, then Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shack, it's my understanding that nothing we do here could prevent these names from being heard on the floor.
A report goes forward to the floor, to the main body. That is my understanding. You raised, through the chair, Representative Gutenberg, there are some questions raised that I don't think I can personally answer in that area. Typically, there is a report that has gone forward from committees that indicated a committee had seen it and sent it on. If it did not go through, it was not scheduled for the floor. That was my previously.
Mr. Shattuck, when I read this and it says, the resource committees reviewed the qualifications and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. If we don't feel one of the people that we're interviewing has the qualifications that we want to move forward for conference on the floor, do we have the opportunity at this time to say we do not want to move that name forward?
Co-Chair Newman, once you release me from this seat, I will find that information and return the report to the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that form is very clear, and it doesn't say whether we like the qualifications or dislike the qualifications. You just said that we reviewed them. And I think that once we've reviewed the qualifications, it is advanced, and I don't think anything we say in this committee on that piece of paper has anything to do with the outcome of the vote on the floor, other than the fact if we can convince 21 of our colleagues that we may be right. But I think that all that says is that we've looked at the qualifications. There's nothing in there that says they're good qualifications, bad qualifications. As you said, we've looked at them. And I don't think that anything we do in this committee, I personally think that if we didn't hold these hearings, they would still advance and be heard. And I think this is a courtesy to the committee to educate itself. But this is one of those situations where I feel we have very little power. And if we want to change that in statute, that may be something we want to do. But I think that's the situation we find ourselves in today.
That's kind of the way I confer with that, too. But Representative Tuck, and then Kawasaki and Seaton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your question, because I think that my question kind of, or my statement kind of resides on that. But I was just looking at it from when Mr. Shattuck read it to us, that this is nothing more than a formality saying that, yes, we acknowledge that we heard and we listened and we reviewed the application. But if it's the intent of having us, the committee, review those to possibly not recommend someone to go forward, then I think that question needs to be asked, because then that kind of it throws away my belief on what the paper says. So thank you. Appreciate it.
I think this, again, to clarify this, it's my opinion and the other co-chairs, that if you do not recommend these names to go forward, do not sign it. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, that was just my clarification, because the way it was written, it says that we recommend that the body consider these names, and I don't know if I'm going to feel that way about every person that comes before this committee.
Yeah, Neil, I have that opinion. You can voice that on the floor and talk about it, what your reasons are, but I believe if you don't recommend these names, then don't sign this.
Thank you.
And the question I have is if we would have one of these on each individual that we look at.
Chairman Newman, no, we won't. But as you just pointed out, if you were to have contention with one, then you would have contention with the whole package. Ergo, one sheet, no signature would imply you had contention with one.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in some aspect, in the past, we've had individual names on those sheets. However, the committees do not, have never exercised veto power on the joint session considering a name. So, as I say, Mr. Chairman, in the past, the committees haven't had veto power over the joint session considering an appointment that's made by the governor. But they were all on an individual sheet, so it gave more comfort to everybody. But it was still, in the past, a situation where the committee of jurisdiction was asked to review the qualifications of people so that if the committee members had discomfort with somebody, they could share that with the joint session or beforehand, but that they could share that at the time so that someone, some committee has reviewed these nominees who have been put forward, but that it was a, it's a joint session and it's, so it wasn't a veto power on those nominees being heard and voted down. Some of them have been voted down on the floor. But if those aren't considered by a committee in the legislature, then we really don't have anything other than the piece of paper, and there haven't been any questions asked. So I am less comfortable with the current thing where we have multiple names on one sheet of paper. But I think that the power that we have is exactly the same as we've exercised in the past.
Yeah. Representative Olson, and I think Representative Johnson maybe has some.
Only one body has to put a name forward. We could reject everybody that's before us today, and it wouldn't make any difference if the other body took them. It only takes one body. But I'm still curious, as you know, typically forms have a form number or something where they originated. Again, I haven't seen this before. That doesn't mean we don't have it in the office. Specifically, is this a resource form, or are all the committees that have names before them?
This is not a resource form, and I think our co-chair is going to
trust me.
The co-chair and I, we talked about this, and we maybe have something to talk about here.
I think I'd like to know where it came from before I even consider signing it. I mean, it's new to me.
Excuse me. My name is Deborah Higgins. I'm staff to Representative Johnson, and it does come from the clerk's office, but each name is on an individual sheet of paper, and then it has an action date at the top. So if there are the three for consideration today, they're on three separate sheets with one referral form because they're all being considered on today's calendar. But we could have a separate green sheet for each name. In the past, they've just, if you have more than one that you take action on in one day, then you just have the one green sheet with the three white sheets with each name on it. Or each name is on a separate sheet, I should say that. I apologize.
Follow up?
Representative Olson.
Did the green, who generated the green sheet?
The clerk's office, yes.
Okay, that's
yes.
What I was trying to
get. Oh, I apologize. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would like to make a suggestion, if possible, for the committee, that we go ahead and hear the three people that we have before us today, that we get some answers to our questions, and we don't have to sign these sheets today. But if we hear them and get them out of the way, we'll have some clarification. In their next meeting, we'll bring them up, and we can either sign, fight it, whatever we choose to do. My inclination is not to pass out one blanket sheet, but I would like to get some clarification. But I do think we have people on the line. Let's go ahead and hear these people, not sign a sheet today, and come back at our next meeting and satisfy some of these questions that we have, so we can let some of these people who are on long distance and maybe busy off the hook, and we can move on. Mr. Chairman, that's my recommendation.
Yeah, I think that's a good recommendation, and we will have somebody from the administration here to talk about the origination, how this, or you know, how we came about this process, why it was changed from the past, and to answer some of the questions, because obviously there's members here who are uncomfortable with this, and we're not going to do that. So as the chair, we're not going to again move these names forward. We'll hold them to Friday, but I do want to make sure that we get the interview process done on these people today. And if we have to, if there's questions, we will notify the people that we've interviewed today that we have further questions for them on Friday, if committee members have further questions of them. Is that everybody okay with that? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Right now, Mr. Nikish?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record.
Kirk Nikish.
Please go ahead.
My name is Dirk Nikish.
Yes, Mr. Nikish, can you tell us about yourself and why we should appoint you or forward your name to be a member of the Board of Game?
Well, I guess a little background. We operate an air taxi in northern Alaska up in the Brooks Range. We're a transporter. We move hunters around. We're a small family-owned business. It's my wife and I, and my young kids make up the core of our business. And the reason I'm interested in being on this board is I see there are a lot of issues that our industry is involved in that need to be looked at, and certainly I want to represent our industry in those.
Okay, Mr. Nikish, am I saying that right?
Yes.
You know, I was talking to another legislator today from northwestern Alaska, and he's been involved with hunting his whole life. And it was an interesting comment that he said. He says, you know, the Board of Game does good. He says, and the guides do okay, but the problem we have is with the transporters, that there's not enough regulation to control the movement of transporters, where they go, that there's not enough reporting of who's doing what. Any suggestions or comments on that?
Well, I think that's a very accurate statement. And I, unfortunately, it's a pretty large issue as to how you control transporters. It's a very vague line between what's a transporter and what's an air taxi. And in order to regulate transporters more, right now we have this system where if you're a guide and things don't work out for you, you can quit being a guide and you can be a transporter. Likewise, if you're an air taxi and you do a tremendous amount of hunters, but you don't actually want to play by the existing rules of a transporter, you just quit being a transporter and you are a 135 air taxi, and you're just careful about how you advertise your business, and you can get around all of those. And I guess it's in, I guess I should state, I'm the very last person in the world that is for more regulation. Like I said, we run a small business, and regulation is very difficult. But without it, we aren't going to have an industry here anyhow. My wife, who is a commercial fisherman, often points out to me that every fisherman in the world really dislikes when Fish and Game shows up. But if Fish and Game wouldn't have showed up quite a while ago, we wouldn't have a fishery left in this state. And that's how I feel about the transporters. We do need to regulate the transporters more, I think. And in order to do that, we also need to do a better job of defining what is transporting a hunter, so that we don't just chase everybody away from being a transporter so that they can play their game under a different license, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nikish. Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nikish, can you basically kind of explain to me the difference? Which one does the air taxi have more rules and regulations, or does the is the transporter and the air taxi the same thing?
Well, no, they're not, and they both have their own set of regulations by different bodies. To be an air taxi now is pretty complex. I mean, we're very heavily regulated. I should clarify this. I'm speaking to you from the transporter end in aviation. Okay, we have to be in order to be an air taxi, you're a 135 operator, and you fall underneath all the rules of being 135 operator, drug programs, maintenance programs, pilot training programs, a high level of inspection and scrutiny by the FAA. Currently, to be a transporter, and then the differentiation right now in the state regs between a transporter and an air taxi is you can strictly be an air taxi and not comply with any of the transporter regs if you do not charge a higher fee for hunters or advertise for hunting. So basically, anybody that was a transporter for a long time, and if you increase the rules on being transporters, can essentially quit being a transporter and just go back to being an air taxi and rely on their customer list, and they don't really need to advertise as a transporter anymore. And what the transporter does is it provides a line of liability, if you will. There's more reporting, and there's more ability to potentially regulate a transporter, but right now it's pretty hard to regulate a transporter without all the transporters just disappearing.
Well, Representative Wilson.
So as an air taxi, you just really take somebody to some spot, dump them out, and leave. And if you were, and obviously, air taxi can only do it by air, where a transporter could probably do it by boat or by horses. There's probably other ways that transporters can get to different destinations. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And there are, I know there are a lot of issues in Southeast with water transporters. And I'm trying to learn a lot more about that. Unfortunately, I don't have tremendous experience with waterborne transporters. So I guess my experience is based on the aviation end of the industry.
If I remember right, and I'm not positive about this, but if I remember right, a water transport person can't let the hunters shoot from the boat, but they have to let them off on the land, and then they do their thing. I think there's a, because then they would be a guide instead of a transporter.
Yeah, there are some various regulations along that line, similar to the same day airborne, where you can't get out of the airplane and shoot the same day. But I know with the water transporters, one of the issues that's happening is they feel that the transporters are acting a lot like a guide, because they're strictly driving up and down the beaches looking for an animal, at which point they put the person in a skiff, run them to shore, and they shoot it.
I see.
And so that's certainly an issue, and I guess it's creating quite a few issues, particularly because of the ability to regulate them either through DNR or BLM or any of the other agencies, because really they're not on any of their lands. They're dropping off people, on the water, basically just on the shore, and there isn't jurisdiction at that point.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So Mr. Nickus, I think just to clarify that a little bit, now an air transport, Alaska Airlines, Frontier, I mean, they all transport wild game. But as a transporter, if somebody has a hunting license and shoots a moose, you can move it by air, primarily by ATV, canoe, boat, whatever the case may be, on your back. But you have to have a transporter's license to do that. You cannot transport game that's shot by somebody.
No, that's not really the way the regulation works, and really the term transporter in itself is kind of a bit confusing, because a lot of people think that as just an air taxi, I can haul a hunter and his equipment into the field, and if he shoots something, I can pick him and his people back up. But what I cannot do is I cannot recommend a place for him to go.
Yeah.
I cannot charge him additional money because he's a hunter over what my normal fare is, and I cannot advertise for hauling hunters. So there's really a lot of people that haul game in the state that are not a licensed transporter.
Yep. Mr. Nikish, I think, and we can get into those questions with the Department of Fish and Game individually. Right now, I think we're just kind of interviewing your qualifications to move forward for to be a member of the board. Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nikish, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for still being online after our discussion about the forms we sign. This is one of the many things I say about this job is one of the worst parts of it is not being at home during the spring, which is right now. And I know Coalfoot's a beautiful area. I spent a lot of time in the Ray Mountains in my youth. Are you aware how much time this board takes?
Yes, I am. I've asked both people in the industry their perceptions of it and other board members about the time requirements of the board.
Yeah, well, my comment is, and I personally, this board itself, I don't know. I know the boards of fish, the boards of game themselves, phenomenally time-consuming. And I'm delighted that you're, because you're a new appointee, and I'm glad you've stepped forward to do this. But my comment was simply, your sense of understanding of how consuming these boards can be.
Right. I guess if I could defer back a little bit to my opening introduction. We're a small business, and we're here. We fly in the Brooks Range because we truly love it there. Okay, and we love where we live, and we raise our kids with us. And where I'm going with this is I'd like to be on this board because I think our industry needs some changes in it because I want our industry here for the long run. I'm not sure whether any of my kids will ever fly, but I certainly hope there's the opportunity for them, if they so choose, to live the lifestyle that my wife and I do. And in order to do that, we have to make sure that the industry still exists to support that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that on the application there where it says, could you or a member of your family be affected financially by decisions made by the board? And you said yes. And I was just wanting to clarify. Now, that when we've established this board, it is a board made up of participants in the industry as well as some public people, so that you're coming for one of the transporter or air taxi. You're not one of the guide licenses, are you?
I am not a guide, or do I have a guide license, but I am an air taxi and transporter, and hence, since this board creates regulations for that industry and certainly recommends to other agencies such as DNR policy, obviously decisions made there will affect my entire industry, and that's why I said yes. They potentially will. I mean,
And Mr. Nikish, I don't have any problems with that. I think that we've set up the board that way. I just wanted to clarify the seat that you are applying for, is that a designated seat for either an air taxi or a transporter?
Yes, it is. It is a seat designated for a transporter.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Mr. Nikish, was there any other names forwarded for the air transporter position that you're aware of?
I do not know whether there were or not. I know that they said they were also looking to fill the seat with a water transporter, but I don't know the specifics of.
Okay. Mr. Tuck, Representative Tuck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, I see your 135, license 135 taxi. Have you ever been a transporter by any chance?
Yeah. I was a transporter a number of years ago. And then we just chose not to be as involved in, like I said, it's such a fine line that you do find that you go, well, we really don't fall under the regulatory needs of being a transporter. But I do feel that, like I said, our industry needs some additional regulation and some oversight here. And in order to do that, I see the best way of doing that is by, I guess, tightening up that people that haul hunters into the field would be transporters, which then would encompass me as a transporter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any other questions for Mr. Nikish? Any questions online or in the audience? Hearing and seeing none, we will move to Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Schmidt, I believe. Betty Jo Schmidt?
Yes, Betty Jo Schmidt.
Yes, Betty Jo. Could you please state your name and introduce yourself to the committee?
My name is Betty Jo Schmidt. I go by BJ usually. I've been sitting as a public member on the board for the past 4 years, and I would like to go for another four. My husband and I own a small farm between North Pole and Salcha. We raise sheep. I've worked for Fish and Wildlife Service in the past as biological technician. I'm a hunter myself, and as a public member, have tried to represent the local interests of people, also understanding the industry of hunting, guiding, and transporting, and to maintain that as a possibility. But I'm not involved in hunting, guiding in any way. I just have been kind of on the learning curve the past 4 years, trying to understand everything that's been going on, and it's been interesting to see the changes and trying to regulate, again, the guiding industry, and I'd like to continue to be involved in that.
Representative Wilson has a question, Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you, BJ. I have a question. About how much time does it take to be on the board?
Over the past couple of years, we usually meet twice a year, once in December and once in March, for 3 to 5 days. They kind of schedule it around the seasons for the guides and the transporters to make it a little easier for them. They also schedule the tests for the guides at the end of the time, and a lot of the people involved in the board help administer the tests. And then depending on which committees you might be on, you'll be putting in a few hours here and there working on committee issues.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? You know, Ms. Schmidt, I'm going to ask you a question I meant to ask the other members. So I might come back to them if they're still available. As a board member, what do you feel was the largest controversy that came up in front of you, and how did you deal with it? How did you vote? What can you name a couple of issues that seemed to really jump out at you and how you addressed them?
Sure. One of the main ones was, as Dirk was discussing, the problems with transporters. One of the members mentioned the northwest section of the state, where the guides are actually pretty fairly well regulated, but transporters fly into certain areas and dump hunters on top of each other. There's a working group with a bunch of different members and interest representatives dealing, especially with Unit 23, dealing with the transporters and how to regulate that. So we're just kind of at the beginnings of trying to decide what is necessary. As Dirk said, you don't want to dump a bunch of regulations on people, but something needs to be done because there's a lot of ill will amongst local people there and in some areas in the interior between the local people and transporters putting in way too many hunters. The other issue is that what was mentioned by Mr. Johnson earlier, the guide use areas, it's not... There's a lot of fear amongst the newer guides about being regulated out of the business by not having areas to hunt. But there's also issues where there's way too many guides in particular choice areas. So over the past couple of years, actually since I started, there's been a discussion with DNR how to help the industry, the local people, the resource to survive And one of the ways we've been talking about and DNR has brought forward is the concession use areas, which are not exclusive areas. They'll limit a certain number of people into a certain area, but and they'll have to probably fill out a prospectus to qualify or compete for that area. But it's a way of separating hunters, local people, transporters, not so much, I guess, because they're not involved in this, but spreading the pressure over the countryside instead of sticking it in certain areas. So that's been a big thorny issue, too.
Yeah, BJ, there was a resolution by Representative Osterman that came to this committee a couple of weeks ago that addressed pretty much that specific issue, and it had to do with eliminating some fishing permits or just giving exclusive permits to a certain people that to fish a certain area in the state. And the resolution said that it's the intent of the legislature to not allow that to happen. I think that passed this committee unanimously. So I think this committee doesn't feel too highly on having exclusive areas on there, just an FYI. And, yeah, and I think we're gonna ask the department to come talk to us about that one. We'll certainly be looking at
it. Because there's so many things involved. It's been really hard for me to, come from a flat-footed person who knows a little bit about guiding but has mostly been out hunting moose on my own and try to understand everything that's been going on. And it seems like every part of the state has different issues that need to be considered, too. So it's a big state.
Yeah, it is. It is. Thank you. Any more questions for BJ?
Yeah.
Representative Wilson's got one.
BJ, the question is, how do you, is it that when we're talking about that maybe somebody flies in and drops off a bunch of hunters, is it that somebody else comes in and drops them off in the same place, or is it that that same person comes along and drops somebody else in there, or does it both happen?
It happens. It both happens. There's certain prime areas, and one thing about transporters as opposed to guides, transporters aren't limited where they can put people unless they're doing it on federal lands and they'll have to have a permit. But a transporter can decide to put a guy here, there, anywhere, and he doesn't have to account for it. Whereas a guide, due to the regulations already in place, is limited where he can do his hunting. So a transporter is much more likely, if he's motivated to hunt out an area and then be able to hop over to somewhere else. So it becomes a real big issue.
Okay, thank you. I'm actually, my husband and I went bear hunting, and someone flew us in, and there were other people on the island where we went down by Kodiak. However, he made sure that we were real far away from each other. We never even saw the other hunters at the time. So,
and there is a lot of very ethical people doing it, but there has been a lot of issues too. And different people have different levels of sensitivity and acceptance of what they consider as being enough distance between each other. So, there's ethical ones and there's unethical ones, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So I'm just trying to understand the situation a little more here. So you have guides that would be guiding or taking someone out for game. You have transporter who could advertise that they will take people out, transport them for hunting purposes, and then on top of that you have air taxis, and anybody can go down and say, I want you to take me to X spot, and the air taxi can take them into that spot. They don't need to have a transporter or a guide license. So you have
no.
Okay. So that's the correct interpretation that I have?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you volunteering to be one of the public members. That's an interesting position.
Representative Seaton, that's everybody who wants to try and volunteer on these. You're one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't. And anybody who wants to volunteer, this is particularly one of the tougher ones to be on, and we certainly recognize and you know, appreciate people who want to do this. But Ms. Schmidt, would you support exclusive guide areas if that was that you if that was to be transferred onto state land? Would you support something like that?
Well, again, I beg to kind of redefine things. It's not exclusive guide areas, and it's completely different than what was going on in the 70s. What I think what you need to do is really talk to DNR about it. But as they have set it up, I think, yes, I would support the system they're talking about right now, which is not exclusive. It's competitive. It's not transferable. It has to come up for another bid in so many years. And they've talked to many, many guides to try to decide how many guides should be in each area. And as far as I could tell from our meeting, most of the guides that I've talked to realize that something needs to be done, and they would support a system like this, yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, on that side, too, is I've talked to those, too, but they're guides who already have been there for a long time, and they're the ones who would get the permits. It's the ability for the new guy to try and get in. You know, if there's a young man who grew up in Billingham who knew that area exclusively, hunted there all his life, his family did, how does he get into the system? And that's the question that we're going to be looking at. But we will ask the department to come and talk to us about the difference between transporters and guides and exclusive hunting areas. We're going to get that information from the Department of Fish and Game, so we'll get that request in and get that cleared up for the members here as soon as possible. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. BJ, I think I heard you say earlier, and maybe I misheard it, that you said you didn't have anything to do with hunting or guiding or any of that. And I want to make sure you do. Do you hunt yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hunt. I don't have anything to do with guiding. I've hunted quite a bit and usually take a moose each year, do bird hunting and things like that, but not involved in guiding or transporting.
Thank you. Thank you, BJ. I just wanted to clarify that we weren't putting someone who might, in fact, be anti-hunting on the board. Thank you.
And for the committee's interest here, is we've got a note here from staff that they talked to the clerk in the speaker's office, and what they would like to do is pass around the members the green sheet per nominee, and either you sign it or don't sign, depending on your choice to move that name forward. And it's up to the, you know, I'm going to go to the committee here. If you want more clarification from the department, we'll hold these names forward until Friday. If not, if you feel comfortable doing that per person now, we'll do that now. And I'm going to depend on the committee to help me make that decision. Representative Edgman, so be thinking about that. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick tongue-in-cheek statement. It's too bad we didn't have Representative Osterman here with his resolution on the Western Gulf in terms of limited licenses, because we could apply maybe the same model. Although he's already sailed, he's off talking to the North Pacific Council today.
Well, Representative Edgman, you know, that's a pretty large policy call, I think. And I think it's up to the legislature to weigh in on policy calls like that. So we're going to ask the department to come and talk to us before that happens. And before the Resource Committee, that's certainly our opportunity to do that and to question that further. And I think I'm seeing head shakes from everybody here who thinks that that's probably a good thing to do. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess along those same lines, there is nothing preventing, even though someone has if you have an exclusive guide area, I think that's the term, there's nothing keeping an Alaskan resident from chartering a plane into that area and hunting in that area on their own. I want to make sure that I make sure we're not going down the road of keeping private Alaskan citizens from going. I think what we're talking about is a guided service that limits the number of people you can take. But there's nothing keeping you from jumping in your airplane and going hunting in that area as long as it's in season, legal. And so we're not preventing Alaskans from doing as much as we are preventing someone from hiring a guide and being taken out. So I just want to clarify that to anyone who can answer that question.
Certainly want to recommend that to all these members here to do that as much as you can. Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, my memory is a little foggy on some of this stuff, but we used to have exclusive guide areas, and because I know people that own those areas, and the court threw that out so that we don't have exclusive guide areas anymore. And I don't think that this board, it doesn't establish policy anyway. It recommends to DNR, my understanding. But this It's not like the Board of Fish or the Board of Game. And, you know, I don't, they couldn't establish exclusive guide areas anyway under, you know, the court opinions that we have. So, I mean, I don't want to get tied up around the axle, but I'm not sure where our conversation is. Because, I mean, I heard a question asked of one of the members whether he would, you know, support restricted guiding areas, and that was yes, but I don't think that that was a proposal that was coming that was for going back to exclusive guide areas, and I'm not sure where we are, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's, you're right, and we're going to, I just want to make sure we have clarification, but it's okay. Certainly a question to be asked of members, you know, to go on to the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and, you know, to ask them their opinion on different issues, and that's what we do. And we'll get some discussion from the
Mr. Chairman, if I might. Reverend Messina, I think there is a move afoot to go to some exclusive guide areas to get legislation passed that would allow it to bring it into the court decision so that it would be legal. And I think it is important that if someone's going to make a recommendation, if they're on the, if their recommendation, so I think it is important that we know where they at least stand on that issue. But I do think it's something that we're going to see down the pipe.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
And I'm not at all opposed to that. I just wanted to make sure that my understanding was correct. Before we would do that, that would be legislation that we would have to pass through this committee as separate legislation, and it's not a, it's not something that a member of this board or that the board itself could institute. That's all I was making sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's accurate, but I also know that as we have committee meetings on resources, because people don't meet in resource issues, that the recommendation of a board like this might carry weight with some members.
Sure.
And I think that that's the purpose for asking the questions, is where they stand.
Yeah. And it's a good question. I think that we had a pretty good discussion today on a lot of the issues that we're talking about today.
This is April 1st, but that's not funny. And, sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Order in the court. You know, so and we will ask the department, you know, to come to there. And right now, do we have any more questions for Ms. Schmidt? Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. And I'm just going to ask the committee, do you feel comfortable on signing individual green sheets for these people now, or would you like to hear more from the department later, or how do you want to move forward on this? It is kind of the will of the committee to have individual green sheets on each person on their recommendation of whether they should move that name forward. So staff will have that around. Representative Johnson?
If we're ready for this, I would like to move the committee forward the name of Paul E. Johnson to the position of Big Game Commercial Services Board to a joint session for consideration, and that will be a sheet coming forward. I also move that we, the committee forward the name of Dick Nikic to the position of Big Game Commercial Services Board to a member to the joint session for consideration. And thirdly, I'd like to move the committee forward Betty Jo B.J. Smith to the position of Big Game Commercial Services Board to a joint session for consideration.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I don't see any objection to that. So with that, I would like to just make sure everybody stays here and gets these, so I don't want to gavel out yet, to make sure that everybody signs on these sheets. We're going to guard the door, but I guess we can adjourn for the day and make sure that this happens.